All right. So now this week we're looking at growing by leaps and bounds. And what we're looking at here in 1 Peter, just to provide a little bit of context, is the Apostle Peter wrote this epistle, which is a letter to a group of Christians scattered throughout the northern areas of Asia Minor. And now it was written to encourage others to persevere through suffering. And when we talk about suffering, it's not just suffering of either heartaches or pain, but it's trials and just work and sweat and persecution. It's everything. Anything could fall within the category of that suffering. And I was asked before about the relationship with God versus religion and what the differences were. And sometimes people just want to understand what the relationship with God looks like. You know, some might sit there and say, hey, I go to church. I mean, well, that's great. But the thing is, do you have that relationship? And that's a difference. And, you know, so you might say, how do you have a personal relationship with God? Now, think about that, okay? God doesn't engage in a faculty of speech like you and I both know it, right? But, and also, God doesn't send you a text message or an email. He doesn't email you during the day. And God doesn't pick up the phone and say, what's up? This is God. No. And to make matters a little bit more complicated, he's invisible. Okay. And he's invisible, but yet he's everywhere. So person you're having a personal relationship with you can't see, right? Makes dynamic much more difficult, right? Well, that's because we are visual people. And we like to see the people that we're having a relationship with, that we're talking to, that we're interacting with. And it reminds me of this story. A little girl wrote a letter to God and said, "Dear God, are you really invisible or is that just a trick?" Well, it's a pretty cool trick, but how do you have the relationship with him? We want to see God. And even Moses, who heard God's voice and saw miracles that God had performed, he wanted more. He wanted him personally. Okay? And that's just one example here, right? Moses cried out, "Show me your glory. I want to see you." At our very core, we want to see and touch and experience God. But how? How can we see and touch and experience God? Well, here's the answer to that question. And it's actually simple. In any personal relationship with any person, visible or invisible, there are two things that must be present. And one of those things we kind of talked about last week, but those two things are love and trust. Okay? So now I want you to take a look at the verses we're going to consider, which I already mentioned at the beginning. It's going to be in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses, it's actually verses 8 through 9, but I'm going to start back and get a little bit of context. We're going to start at verse 6. So 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 6 through 9. Okay, so what it says here, and I'm going to read it to you guys. It says, "In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved. Various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than the gold that perishes through it, is tested by fire. may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Though you have not seen him, you love him. Though you do not now see him, you believe in him and rejoice with joy that is inexpressible and filled with glory, obtaining the outcome of your faith, the salvation of your souls. So, here, Peter, he's not minimizing what we're feeling. He's not minimizing what we're feeling. He knows what we're going through is very heavy. Okay? Now, it's only for a season. It's temporary. We rejoice because what? We are going to heaven. Okay? Now, think about it this way. Let's just say you're going on a flight to San Francisco, okay? You're at the ticket counter, and the agent says, your flight is on time, but there's some turbulence, but we'll guarantee you that we'll get you there. The plane is in great shape. The pilot is fully qualified. You might have a bump or two, but you'll get there just fine. And like, okay, sounds good. You know, some people get a little rattled because of turbulence. So you ask for a different flight, right? And the different flight attendant or the travel ticket agent says, hey, we'll guarantee you a smooth flight, but the landing we're not too sure about. The landing gear hasn't been working right, seemed to have a problem landing nose first. Now think about this, okay? If we choose between a smooth flight with a crash landing or a bumpy flight with a safe landing, we'll probably pick the bumpy flight because none of us wants to crash land, right? So thinking about this context, when you go through trials, and we will, there's no way around it, we may say that we don't want to see anything, we may say that we don't see anything good coming out of this, right? Sometimes you'll even see it in the movies, right? Oh man, this can't be good. Oh no, what's going to happen next, right? We don't see anything good coming out of it. But guess what? The Bible says, if you look, and I'll read it to you, you don't have to turn there. Romans chapter 8, verse 28. And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. So, now, in verse 8 of what we just read, it says, though you may not have seen him, you love him. Though you do not now see him, you believe in him. And rejoice with that joy that is inexpressible and filled with glory. Now, in that verse, in verse 8, you're going to see two different ingredients mentioned, and that is love and trust. Those are the two essential ingredients for any personal relationship. If you violate love, relationship disintegrates. It falls apart. If you violate trust, the same thing. The relationship disintegrates and falls apart. So now, using verse 8 and 9, we just read verse 8. Verse 9, obtaining the outcome of your faith, the salvation of your souls. Okay. So with that, as we're going through it, I see Brother Mike just came in. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 6 through 9. With verses 8 and 9, we're going to unpack these phrases, and we notice what Peter's saying. The relationship with God is based on love and trust. Now, First of all, this is a relationship based on love. And verse 8, now think of the audience to whom Peter is writing. Peter wasn't writing to the apostles who had been with Jesus personally. He's writing to the scattered believers throughout Asia Minor who had never, ever met Christ. They have never seen him with their eyes, never heard his voice, and never gazed into his eyes when he spoke, never ate with him, and never walked with him. And these are the very ones that Peter's talking to. Now, these were the one very ones that Jesus prayed about in John chapter 17, when after praying for his own apostles, said, I pray not for these alone, but for all of those who will believe in me through their word. So that is who he is writing to. Had no firsthand experience with Christ, but they believed in him. And according to Peter, they loved him. Whom have not seen you love, right? To whom have not seen you love. Now, it is normal to love. And let's put it this way. It is normal to fall in love with somebody when you see them. And you know, in the old days, they used to plan for marriages before you even saw the person. Not a great idea, right? But necessarily, but because you could be surprised once you see that person. But Peter says, you love someone you don't see, and you are growing in love with that someone you don't see. An unbeliever might say, impossible. This is impossible. It's not possible. How do you Christians know that you didn't just make this up, right? You get all these different responses, interactions. You know, they might say, maybe it's just simply a projection of yourself. You're just loving the projection of yourself, calling it God, but he's a mythical figure, can't love somebody you don't see, right? And these are unbelievers that might say this. But guess what? Unbelievers are also described in the Bible as those who do not love the Lord. They don't love him. We see in 1 Corinthians 16, verse 22, if anyone does not love the Lord Jesus Christ, let him be accursed. The Lord comes. Okay. Now, let me suggest to you that this is where we should make our examination. You ask a person, do you love Jesus? You ask them that. Now, could you imagine if you tried that when you're witnessing somebody, right? Instead of saying, have you ever heard of the four spiritual laws? People might look at you like, what? Just ask them, do you love Jesus? It's that simple. Just ask them, do you love Jesus Christ? And you will be amazed by the answers you receive. So, invisible doesn't mean unlovable, but it also doesn't mean unavailable, right? Just because you can't see God doesn't mean he's not available to help you. Now, Jeremiah chapter 33 says, call on me and I will answer you. If we're not calling on him, you know, can we be mad if he's not answering? What are you doing to call for him? Are you asking him? Are you reaching out? You guys remember when Peter tried to walk on the water? And he reached out his hand and saying, Lord, save me. When he fell into the water, right? He called on him and he answered. And God says, call on me and I will answer you. And I will show you great and mighty things which you do not know. Now, that is availability. That is all part of the love relationship Invisible doesn't mean unlovable. Invisible does not mean unavailable. Now, look again at verse 8. You see, love and trust go together. So you don't see him, but now you trust him. You believe in him. In fact, until we can see, that's what we have. That's what Paul said. Paul says, "For we walk by faith and not by sight." So in this relationship, based on love and trust, there's a gladness of heart. There's a satisfaction. In fact, let me frame it for you this way. Most of God's people throughout all of time are just like we are, right? Just like the recipients of this letter, they never saw him. Only 3 to 3.5 years did people see God in the human flesh walk the earth. Like Peter, James, John. But for the most part throughout history, God's people never seen him. But they've loved him and they trusted him and they're happy. But we can rejoice as well. In the New Testament, Paul makes a command of rejoicing. It'd be hard to command someone to be happy, right? You might say, you can't command somebody to do that. Well, Paul does. Look in Philippians chapter 4, verse 4. He says, "Rejoice in the Lord." What makes that a powerful verse is that Paul gave that command from prison, a Roman prison. He wasn't in the Ritz-Carlton. He's in a Roman jail. You know what this tells me? For him to write in those circumstances and give a command tells me joy has little to do with what's going on around you, but it has a lot to do with what's going on inside of you. We're not to be concerned of the cares of this world. We're supposed to be concerned with what? Our eternal kingdom that's going to be coming, we're going to be visiting soon. Okay? Not the circumstances around us, but what's going on inside of us. And it makes me think, of all places that I've traveled, one place sticks out to me is Iraq. For those that know, I was in the military. I went to Iraq twice. And I traveled there a couple times, you know, of course, twice, a couple times. But I met some Christians in that country. And one of the things that I experienced when I was there is that I feel convicted being around them. Because they have such joy, and yet they're persecuted. You know, there's shootings, there's killings, bombs, and all these struggles. And yet they're still happy. Most of them struggling to survive. They have very little of this world's goods, and they're full of joy. Several years ago, also, I had the opportunity to go to Puebla on a missions trip. And we did a VBS with tons of children. It was great. And I watched this one child and listened to some of the answers that this child would call out through this VBS. And he talked about how he didn't have a mattress to sleep on. He slept on the ground and slept on the floor. And both of his parents worked, and he barely saw them. And he'd wake up early and walk pretty far to get to this VBS without any ride, with no parents dropping him off, and so on. And I think, you know, if we keep going on and just thinking about what this kid's going through, we probably get the picture. But one of those days, I noticed that he wasn't really eating. So I had given him some food. I think it was like a bread or a sandwich or something. And watching from the distance, he went and sat next to another group of kids, and he started breaking the bread or a sandwich, whatever it was, and he had given pieces and sharing with others. You know, so I think about how we complain about things here, right? It's too cold. It's too hot. This person said this. This person said that. Why is this happening? Why is that happening? We're never satisfied. But this child had nothing, but yet he had everything. Because it's not about the circumstances around us. It's about what's happening inside. What is God doing inside of you? What type of love is being placed in your heart? And what kind of trust do you have in him? This boy appeared to be happy, even in the circumstances that he was dealt with. He was full of joy. So, not only do trials strengthen our faith, but they also deepen our love for the Lord. And we're going to close it off again with verse 9, okay? Really, it's a postscript in this thought, and there's a comma, and then verse 9. But it's the same thought, okay? Receiving the end of your faith, the salvation of your souls. Please don't misunderstand that verse, okay? He's not saying that if you keep on loving and keep on trusting, that in the end, God will finally save you. He's not saying that. It simply means this: what's invisible now and apprehended only by faith now will one day be visible and one day be tangible. This relationship you have with God that is so indescribable doesn't even pale in comparison to what is coming up when he shows up. So some might say, I hear all the promises of God, but don't see the glory. And this is because there's a valley between them, maybe a week, maybe a month, a decade, or a lifetime. But God, his plan is unfolding. We may not see it now, but we will. And it's unfolding because the glory always follows suffering, always. So it's about God's love, our trust in him, right? As we refresh our minds in this and think about this, when we step out of our house, when we, you know, interact with people, if somebody asks us about Jesus Christ, somebody asks us about God, this relationship that we're growing in, this love and this trust, provides you the foundation of everything else that is coming next.